This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Welcome to The Untold Story, everybody. I'm Martha McCallum. It is great to have all of you out there with us for this new edition of our podcast. And I'm joined today by Abigail Schreier. Abigail is the author of a new book called Bad Therapy: Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up. And you probably know Abigail from a lot of her other writing. She is just a super sharp voice in so many of the issues that we're facing today societally and with our children. So her prior book was a huge bestseller, Irreversible Damage: The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters, and it was named a best book by The Economist and The Times. It has been translated into 10 languages and all of that, Abigail, despite the fact that it was banned in a few places. So great to have you with us today. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
You know, I guess I want to start. I always like on The Untold Story to give our listeners a sense of who you are, where you come from. I know you're a parent. What has made you so drawn to these things that are so challenging and in some cases devastating to today's children, teens, and young adults?
Well, I'm raising three kids, and I really wanted to know why this generation that had seen no world war, no Great Depression, until recently no pandemic even, seemed to be suffering so greatly. And also, they were the generation that got the most mental health treatment. They got the most diagnosis, the most therapy. 40% of them have been in some kind of therapy. 42% have a diagnosis. They should be the picture of wellness. Instead, they seem to be the picture of despair. And I wanted to know why.
So this book, as I said, Bad Therapy: Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up, and I've heard you talk about it. There's a lot in here that is pretty devastating. And I think, you know, as parents, I have three children too. It's, you know, everybody seems to be in and out of therapy, on and off of medications, very, very, in some cases. And, you know, I also want you to talk about how you separate someone who is very much in need of that kind of service and someone who kind of just ends up in it because either their parents think they should go or somebody at school says they should go. How do you sort that out, Abigail?
Right. So if you try other things and you can't stabilize your child, if there is no other way to stabilize them, then therapy and medication even might be the right course. But the problem is it's our default now. Teachers are a major source of mental health referral today and diagnosis. School counselors freely diagnose the kids. First, they tell them to obsess over their own emotional state. And when they're dysregulated, they tell the parents there's something wrong with them. And the kids are getting this message. They're getting the message. They never say they're shy. They say they have social anxiety. They never say they're sad. They say they're depressed. They are psychopathologizing all aspects of life. So way too many fish are getting caught in this net.
So how does that happen? You know, I mean, growing up, you know, experience all these things. I remember feeling what's now called social anxiety, nervous to go to a party, nervous nobody would like me or my outfit or whatever it was. It seemed like it was part of growing up. But you hear many kids express these kinds of fears today. And I feel like in many cases, they think everyone else is super confident and really, you know, comfortable in all these situations, when in reality, they probably aren't either. So how do they label themselves with all these things and layer up all of this baggage that they put on them? I think sometimes put on themselves, and who's putting it on them?
That's right. The mental health industry, which had nothing to say about the lockdowns, even as we headed into a second year, nothing to say.
I love that point.
Nothing to say about social media. No blanket, you know, calls to ban it, or even for children. No, they now present themselves as the solution. Well, they have been psychopathologizing our children for a generation, teaching them that all nervousness is a sign of serious disorder. And these kids don't know. They don't know that their grandparents got through harder things because we were were afraid to tell them. Mm-hmm. And they don't know that resilience is actually the story. And research backs this up. Resilience is the story of the human condition, not trauma.
You know, you talk about the studies that have been done, which show that exercise, for example, participating in a team sport has a very positive, beneficial effect for a child who is, feels depressed or feels sadness, involvement in things. Is this, you know, I feel like kids are involved in so many of these activities. You know, what do you see?
But the kids are always in a supervised activity. They're never left alone. Mm. You know, when researchers study this, that when psychologists want to add stress to a subject, they add monitoring. Monitoring is effectively the same as adding stress, and that's what we do. We give kids an unhealthy life full of tech, full of needless supervision, full of constant surveillance, and then we pour mental health resources into an unhealthy life, expecting it to cure it. It doesn't. What they need is parental authority. What they need is connection to extended family. And what they need is a certain amount of independence to take on responsibility without constant surveillance.
Do kids have enough jobs and tasks and assignments and things to do?
Exactly. They don't have enough of those things. Anything that makes you feel competent in the world makes you stronger. And that's the problem. We've been obsessing with what will make kids happy. We haven't asked at all one question. And I want parents to ask this: will this make my child stronger? That should be the question. If you really want happy kids, you should start by making them stronger.
Yeah, that is such a good point. And I think about, you know, growing up, my parents certainly had jobs when they were growing up. We always had, right. You know, we weren't running the farm or anything, but we had chores, tasks, household things you had to do before you might be allowed to go out on the weekend. You had to kind of check off your list of things. And it feels like, and I think I'm guilty of this in my own house too, that I didn't do enough of that when I was raising my kids. So how do you reverse that? And how do you keep kids from saying, well, my friends don't have to do any of this stuff? And how do you answer those questions? Why are we different?
Parents need to stop turning over their authority to experts. They need to reassert their own authority. If they could handle something that when they were kids, then your kids can handle it. Responsibility is so good for kids. Saying no is so good for kids. We need to tell these kids they're going to be just fine. Every time they faced adversity, they're not going to crumble. They're going to be just fine. We forgot that message. And unfortunately, they're now full of fear and worry, and they're afraid to grow up. They don't feel adequate to adult responsibilities. We need to reverse that now. And chores and responsibilities is a great way to start.
You know, a couple things that you mentioned, which I've heard you mention before, that I want to touch on, that I think puts a lot of responsibility on some of these folks who are guiding our kids into all of this therapy and in some cases medication. And we, you know, sometimes that's, as you say, when everything else has been tried, those things are necessary with some children who have a serious physical or psychological disorder who need those kind of things. But on the whole, the mental health, people who are in the institutions of mental health, they never spoke out about what would the impact be of school lockdowns on our children, which they're still devastated by. And in many places, especially the poorest places in the country, struggling so hard and probably will never get caught up. Social media and video games. Why haven't they spoken out the impact of these things on our kids' development?
Because as we were headed into a second year of lockdowns, parents were so upset. Do you know what the American Psychological Association, the School Counselors Association, do you know what all these organizations were doing? They were coming to Congress or warning others about climate change, about systemic racism, right? They are only interested in things that will give them a role and allow them to preach to students. They are not, and to maintain their own authority. They have no interest in anything like social media, like the lockdowns, because it won't give them a constant role in kids' lives. And that's the problem. They have been no help, and now they're posing as the solution.
The Untold Story continues right after this.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You know, I see a lot of kids who whose parents use their own phone. They'll hand them the phone so they can look at something while they're, you know, out somewhere. Or they're sitting in a restaurant staring into an iPad screen and watching a movie while their family has dinner. And I feel like it's so obvious that when you allow this connection to be created at such a young age, where they want this constant feedback from something that's, you know, showing them pretty pictures and entertaining them all the time, of course it's just going to get deeper and deeper ingrained in their body and their mind. Why doesn't anyone talk about, you know, cutting off these things, not allowing kids until a certain age to even touch phones and deal with these things?
That's right. It is an absolute no-brainer. We have known about the harms to these things for at least 8 years. We've known that various social contagions are passed through things like social media. But also, anytime you get high-end tech to a kid, you see how hysterical they become when you take it away. Parents knew that this was dangerous behavior. What we got was no support. And in fact, the mental health industry undermined our confidence by constantly telling us it would cause the kids trauma to be cut off from their friends. It was never true, and it was really unhelpful.
So, you know, give us some rules. I mean, what do you think, as a parent, what should people, what's the right age to give a child a phone? Should they have video games at all? What kind of rules do you suggest?
You know, I think that, you know, some of these things in moderation are fine. You know, my own kids don't have social media or phones. I guess my oldest boys are 13. They don't have them. But more importantly, if parents are the authority in their home, which doesn't mean being unloving, but a loving authority, kids do best when they have authority at home. And once parents assert their own authority, not the authority of a hired expert, but their authority, they can make these determinations. When they instill basic rules in their home, then they don't have to be afraid of every, you know, bit of social media or every video game. They can trust their own judgment, and that's what they need to be doing. They need to be giving these kids healthy lives surrounded by extended family or people who love them and they love back over time. That's so good for kids, and give them real independence, real ability in the world. That will do more than any quick app or fix from the mental health experts.
So what do you say, not to get too personal, you can share what you want, obviously,
sure.
But what do you say when your 13-year-old say, why don't I have a phone? Everyone I know has a phone and social media.
Right. Well, I mean, they know that they cause all kinds of harms. I don't really care what anyone else is doing. I'm in charge of them, right? Mm-hmm. It's not my business to be in charge of other people's kids. I'm in charge of you. It's not rocket science. It's something that we actually have been saying to kids for generations. We just lost our confidence to say it. And what I want more than anything is for parents to take that back. You know, they know how to raise good kids. We've known this for so long. We have raised wonderful adults in this country, good people, people who are load-bearing walls, good neighbors, good parents, good friends, and good spouses. And we stopped doing that, and we need to get back to it.
You know, you mentioned this, and you talk about your grandmother and the adversity that she faced, what people faced in World War II. I mean, does it take a major catastrophe for everyone to kind of wake up about personal responsibility and how precious children are?
I don't think so. We just need to go back to involving grandparents. You know, every one of us has a remarkable story of resilience in our own families. We just need to tell the kids what their great-grandparents went through, what their grandparents went through. I think we stopped doing it because we started believing in nonsense like inherited trauma. But the truth is, in every family in this country, there's a story of remarkable resilience. You have proof you can give your kids that our people got through hard times, and you can too. It's a wonderful thing for a kid to go through life with, knowing that their genetic material made it through really hard things.
You know, in terms of therapy and, you know, most of these therapists, they don't really talk to the parents. They only talk to the child. And there's not a lot of communication between. How dangerous is that? What do you think about that?
It's very dangerous. Look, one of the, you know, it's not that therapy, if for a child who needs it, can't be. Of course, it can be life-saving. But here's the problem. One of the classic side effects of therapy is alienation from parents. And we're seeing this. We have never seen a generation cut off their parents at this rate. And I have talked to experts, psychological experts in parent alienation, and they tell me the number one mischief maker is the child's therapist. And I want parents to know that there are costs to therapy. That doesn't mean you should never do it, but there are real risks. The other real risk is a child will feel like they can't take any risks on their own. They can't trust themselves to try something without consulting with an expert. And that treatment dependency is another thing we're seeing across this generation.
And like any other treatment, if you break your ankle, you get a cast. Over time, your ankle gets better. Then you might do some physical therapy to really get it working again. There's not a lot of measuring. The therapy seems to go on forever in terms of, is this working? Are you getting better? Are you having these coping abilities strengthened? So now we're done, right? Is there a point where you're done?
That's the problem. Remember, an adult in therapy can say to a therapist, you know, I think we're blaming my mom a little too much, or I wouldn't call it emotional abuse. It's just my dad's joke or whatever. But it's very hard for a child to say those things. It's very hard for a child to say to a therapist, I'm not sure I would call my parents toxic, especially if they're teenagers and angry with mom anyway. Mm-hmm. It's a very seductive suggestion. And unfortunately, we're seeing this in kids' therapy, all the negative effects of therapy, and they're getting it from school counselors, they're getting it across the board. It's way more pronounced in kids and teens than it would be in an adult.
So from your research, how do parents know the difference? How do they know whether or not their child needs a therapist or whether they need the parent to say, look, everything's going to be okay. Everybody goes through these things and you're going to be fine.
Well, I think they should start by saying everything's going to be okay. You're going to be fine. They should start by looking at the kid's life and seeing what they can change, right? Mm-hmm. Are they watching YouTube before school? That's not going to make them be able to sit still in a teacher's class. Things like that, okay? If they have tried everything and they really can't stabilize a child any other way, then the question is, who should I trust my child with? And the answer should be investigate that therapist as you would any surgeon. Because a lot of mischief is made in therapy. And the same thing with, by the way, all these medications. If you can turn your life upside down to avoid starting a child on a stimulant, it's worth doing.
Mm-hmm. And what do you mean by turning your life upside down?
What that means is there are a lot of behavioral modifications that seem to have some success, like removing tech, assigning chores, giving kids more structure, not less, often helps with the level of distractibility in a child. Exercise helps. There are a lot of things that can help. But starting a child on a stimulant, you're talking about something they're going to need. This is for ADHD medication and whatnot. Mm-hmm. They're going to need more and more of it over time. And of course, the susceptibility to addiction is very worrisome. You don't want to start your kid down a road of being on an anti-anxiety medication, antidepressant, unless you absolutely need to.
I want to ask you one last question, Abigail, before we run out of time. You brought up something about the impact of this on young adults and people who are in the workforce, where instead of saying, give me that job, I want that promotion, I can do this, I can do that, you're seeing that they're saying, you know, I don't know if I'm ready for that job yet. I think I need a little more time in this job, which is not the way most of us started our careers.
That's right. Over half of the rising generation believes it is mentally unwell. Over half. What that means is they don't feel up to the tasks of adulthood. That's why they're not growing up. That's why they're not going for it and seeking out that job. They've convinced themselves that they are too mentally weak to try. And here's the secret. Growing up is the solution to adolescent angst. They need more responsibility, more freedom, and more chance to try. That's the only way to get over the fears of growing up is to try.
Maybe they need a little imposter syndrome. I can do it. I can do this job 100%. Abigail, thank you so much. I think this is such an important book, and I hope that a lot of parents and, you know, kids who are old enough to read it and understand it, get their hands on it. It's called Bad Therapy, Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up by Abigail Schreier. It is her latest deep dive into some of the things that our children are facing after her bestseller, Irreversible Damage. Abigail, thank you so much. Great to have you with us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
That is the Untold Story podcast for today. Join us next time. I'm Martha McCallum. You've been listening to The Untold Story with Martha McCallum. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Make sure to rate and review. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with the Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.